Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. After 6 years of planning, renovations, and repurposing, the Philbrook Museum of Art will open a new satellite location to the public this weekend. Philbrook downtown opens in the heart of the Brady District. The final piece of the renovated block along Matthews Warehouse that was renovated by the George Kaiser Family Foundation. Philbrook downtown will hold 30,000 square feet of exhibit space for the museum's extensive collection of Native American art and for the museum's growing modern and contemporary collections. Several temporary galleries for small shows will also be included. Another honor came to the museum last month when the American Alliance of Museums singled out Philbrook for their commitment to community and being relevant and engaged across all segments of the city's population. Philbrook is one of six institutions featured in the new book, Magnetic, The Art and Science of Engagement, by researchers Anne Bergeron and Beth Tuttle, which examines how the museum has sought to remake its image in the eyes of the community. Joining us to talk about both of these events is the executive director of Philbrook Museum of Art, Rand Suffolk. He joins us today to talk about the opening of Philbrook Downtown, which opens to the public on Friday. Rand Suffolk, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us, and this is a very exciting time for Philbrook.
It sure is, and thanks for having us back.
Yeah, this weekend marks the opening of this long-awaited addition to Philbrook, which I've been hearing about for 5 to 10 years, and of course it's been actual reality for the last few years. Philbrook Downtown, a downtown location for the museum. You have a beautiful facility in Brookside, but it is in a residential neighborhood, and so that sort of limits the amount of, you know, how you can grow the facility. So now you have this new location downtown. What does this add to Philbrook?
An entirely new dimension to us, and it's been 6 years in coming, actually. But I have to say a couple things. The first of which is that it's well worth the wait. You know, I think it's fair to say that we simply never imagined that when we were given this opportunity to be down there in the Matthews Warehouse, from the George Kaiser Family Foundation, it's entirely their generosity that we're there in the first place. We had no idea that not just our project, but ultimately that entire area down there would undergo the amount of change that would become this ecosystem that it has at the pace and to the extent that it has. And because of that, I mean, it took a little bit longer, but at the end of the day, everybody is more than gratified that it did, because we are blessed with an astonishing new location. And so we're really excited about that. It, the great thing about moving downtown also is that it gave us simply more real estate. You know, we're using that space downtown to do two things. One is to highlight our great Native American collection. Philbrook is blessed literally with one of the finest surveys of 20th century Native American art anywhere on the face of the planet.
And how much of that sits in storage at the current facility?
Almost all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we have, you can get a small taste of it, an example, but we simply were not able to cast the kind of spotlight on it that it deserves and that we're able to do now with another 4,000 square feet of gallery space that's dedicated to that. And in the same fashion, on the lower level, we're then focusing on modern contemporary art. And for those that aren't aware of what's happening in modern contemporary art, a lot of it's getting bigger. And, you know, the villa was not designed. It was a home. And those spaces, although we use them as galleries and they're lovely, they're really not created to accommodate the kind of work that contemporary artists are increasingly making right now.
8 or 9 foot canvas.
Exactly.
9 foot high, 10 foot high, 12 foot high at times, yeah. And large installations.
Right. And we've been acquiring that material over the course of the past half dozen years plus as well. And we're excited about having a space where we can present it that's fair to the work, fair to the viewer, and hopefully we'll create the best end-user experience possible there.
You mentioned it took 6 years, you know, from the very first inkling of this idea. How much discussion went into deciding what you wanted to do with this facility that would increase, you know, Philbrook's awareness and, as they say in the jargon, the brand?
Well, I'll tell you, when we were first given this opportunity, the Kaiser Family Foundation said, look, we'll provide you with 10 to 15,000 square feet of space. And at that point, it was right on the heels. Actually, it was part and parcel of our pursuit of the Eugene B. Atkins collection of Native American and Southwestern art. And that was part of our proposal when we went to the foundation, is that Mr. Kaiser said, look, we'll not only write you a letter of support, but we'll also give you this space in this building that we have downtown. And about, we were ultimately successful with University of Oklahoma in acquiring that material, and we split it between the two institutions. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of that, about a year into the planning process, the Kaiser Family Foundation came back to us and said, well, instead of 15,000 square feet, what if we gave you 30,000 square feet? And we said, that's pretty exciting. Let's think about it. Well, it was right about that time that as an institution, we'd been talking about how we could deepen our commitment to modern contemporary art. And we just felt that this was an opportunity that kind of fell in our laps, that we could use the difference of that additional 15,000 square feet to do something very special when it came to modern contemporary material. And so that's what we did. And, you know, our plan moved forward pretty quickly. But again, you have to remember, because we weren't building a standalone project on our own property and so forth, there are a lot of moving parts. There are a lot of moving parts within the Matthews Warehouse. You throw into it Guthrie Green, the other things that were happening down in, you know, the Arts District. And this, as I said, I think earlier, this was an evolving ecosystem. And because we were part of that ecosystem, it may have taken a little bit longer than anyone anticipated. But at the end of the day, we couldn't be more pleased.
Well, and the other thing you have to keep in mind is this has been a trend in art museums around the world, is to create satellite locations. And you have to look at maybe one of the largest example as a perhaps a example of the way not to go. That's Guggenheim, because they built satellite museums all over the place, and now they're really having trouble sustaining them. And for a fairly small museum like Philbrook, you know, $6 million budget, having another location means security. It means all sorts of issues of protecting the art, and it's more overhead.
It's a complex project, but the opportunity that it affords us was one that we simply couldn't pass up. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about, you know, institutions do those satellites, but as you just mentioned, there are a lot of challenges to doing those kinds of things. And we spent a lot of time talking about, how do we make it inevitable? This is not a build it and they will come situation. How do we make it inevitable? And so we have exceptional collections, hired a great architect. We were blessed with this ideal location. But then we've also, over the course of the past half dozen years, been working very hard to, I think, reboot our relationship with the community. We've committed ourselves, you know, collaborations become a part of our DNA. We wanted to make sure that when we opened downtown, we were not some Johnny-come-lately, sort of newly and freshly emerged from our midtown cocoon with our hand out, with zero credibility, with the new audiences that we were, that space was designed to serve. And so from a mission standpoint, it made sense for us to do that anyways. But from a project standpoint, we wanted to make sure that we did everything we could so that we opened the doors. People would say, you know what, of course Philbrook should be down here. Mm-hmm. Of course they should be there.
And of course, one of the things you've done over the last 5 or 6 years, the Third Thursday program, for example, this seems like a natural downtown. Is that going to move downtown, or will it stay at the museum, or are you going to have complimentary programming?
Well, I think that's, first of all, that's exactly the kind of thing that we started to do so that when we did open, we would have, hopefully, an informed, committed, passionate, interested audience for whom that material downtown would make all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. We are going to have to take a look at what we're calling sort of constructive overlap. You know, we're not going to stop doing major exhibitions of modern contemporary art or Native American art at the main campus. But at the same time, not every program that has to do with modern contemporary art, it's going to happen at the mothership. Some of them are going to happen down there. We have to figure out what that balance is, I think, moving forward.
Mm-hmm. So now, out of the 30,000 square feet, you mentioned the first floor will be modern and contemporary art. Give us an example of what's going to be a part of that permanent collection, or will there ever be a permanent collection at Philbrook downtown, or will it be constantly rotating and
well,
moving?
And that first level, there's actually three galleries, one large one that's just over 4,000 square feet. And that gallery, we really are treating like our permanent collection gallery for modern contemporary material. And so you're going to see right now everything from superstars like Willem de Kooning and Clifford Stills. I mean, great paintings that we've borrowed, George O'Keefe and so forth, to some really significant acquisitions that we've made. We've bought work by, you know, going back to wanting to make this inevitable. I think I have a fundamental belief that as an institution, we need to do what we can to make sure that when people come and visit us, whether it's the main campus or downtown, they see some reflection of themselves in us. I mean, we can't be all things to all people, but we need to capture those opportunities when we can. And so when we began to acquire new work, new contemporary work for downtown, we wanted to make sure that it was as diverse as possible. Plus the fact that we don't have unlimited resources. And so it wasn't enough that someone might have, you know, might be a mid-career artist with a track record of exhibitions and, you know, so forth. We needed that, but then we needed to be able to check off some other boxes. So if you were a woman artist, that was important to us. If you're African-American, that was important to us. If you're a Latino artist, that was important to us. So we looked at that sort of thing. If you were an Oklahoman, we threw that into the mix. I mean, all of those things kind of came into play when we were making our decisions. So you're going to go down there and you'll see great artists in their work. For example, three fantastic African-American artists, the Astor Gates, Leonardo Drew and Gary Simmons, Latino artist Arturo Herrera, who happens to be a TU graduate, by the way. Mm-hmm. We bought a wonderful work by him. And then I think some really significant women artists, Louise Lawler, Rachel White Reed, Irene Koppelman is a great new work that we bought. Oklahoman's Lee Mulliken. We bought a fantastic work by Lee Mulliken that we're really proud of. So we've really tried, again, to kind of give people a sense of some of the superstars, the people that perhaps have defined some elements of 20th century, at least Western art history. But at the same time, we're really trying to look at the emerging artists of today that are starting to put their stamp on what's happening.
So that will be in the main gallery.
Sorry. Yeah. Yes, that's in the main gallery. And then we have two smaller galleries, which will change. Mm-hmm. And right now, for example, one of those is focused on a mid-century abstract expressionist painter, typically known as a painter, Adolf Gottlieb. But he, for about a year, created a body of sculpture, and so we're displaying those sculptures along with some of his paintings. And in the smallest gallery, we're focusing on, it's called Sirens of the Southwest, and it's women artists of the Southwest. And that was an important collecting area for us during the disposition of the Adkins material. When it came to the Southwestern material, we made a big commitment to collecting women artists in depth. And so this is a great first example of that material and putting it on display there.
All right, that's the first floor.
That's the first floor.
And then up on the second floor, is it mainly Native American art?
It's all Native American all the time up there. We have one big, beautiful gallery that's dedicated to our Native American collection.
So it'll show off the great basketry collection and the pottery collections, as well as the two-dimensional art.
And we have fantastic paintings. I mean, you name it, it's up there. And we've done, Christina Burke, our curator, has done something I think very remarkable. And that's that we made a decision early on. We were not simply going to do an installation like many of our colleague institutions do, where it's by geography or by culture, and you say, okay, here's what the Plains Indians did, and you put it over there and so forth. What she's attempted, and I think been successful at doing, given the breadth and scope of our collection, is something a little more nuanced and complex. And that's really charting the evolution of Native American art and identity during the course of the 20th century, where at the beginning, these works were done by anonymous artists viewed as being part of, you know, a community in which they were done, almost viewed from an anthropological standpoint as being more artifact.
Yeah, their function's a big part of the art
exactly.
Object.
Uh-huh. And to at the end of the 20th century, when you've got these works that are created by highly individual artists with a very specific intent behind them that have developed their own personality, and these are regarded as objects of the highest aesthetic value. And so what's happened during the 20th century to make that happen, that evolution, whether it's some social forces, market forces, you know, what all came to play to kind of chart that evolution of those. And it makes for a very, I think, enlightening and enjoyable installation.
And, of course, Philbrook was a big part of that sort of evolution because of the Philbrook Annual in the 40s and 50s.
You're absolutely right. And one of the things that we try and do with this exhibition is comment on that. I mean, that's a part of our history we need to re-embrace and put out there. And in about a year to 2 years, I forget exactly when it is, but we're doing a big show that's going to focus on the Indian Annual and our role in kind of pushing exactly what we've been talking about forward.
Could you see a facility like this sort of facilitating a return to that role that Philbrook has played? I mean, there are lots of other locations now that have sort of supplanted the importance of the Philbrook Indian Annual, but does this location sort of give a new impetus to be a part of that movement?
Two things on that. The first one is I don't think we can go back in terms of a marketplace.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the Indian Market in Santa Fe and so forth, there's a lot of other places that do that.
Yeah.
I think we can play two distinct roles, though. The first is in cultural tourism and getting people into have a broader understanding and involvement with this material. If you look, I've talked publicly about this before, but if you look at, okay, so we've got our collection now up and running, beautiful. Gilcrease has a remarkable collection of Western material. You go to the other end of the turnpike, you've got the Fred Jones Jr. and what they've done with their half of the Adkins collection. The Sam Noble has good Native American art. You got the Cowboy Hall of Fame and so forth. The point is that I think one would be hard-pressed to find anywhere else in the country within a two-hour radius both the quantity and quality of Native American and Southwestern material that you can find here in Oklahoma. And from that standpoint, we really should be getting together, throwing a little bit of money into a pile, creating a marketing plan, perhaps working with the state tourism office, and focusing on places like Santa Fe and say, okay, why can't we drive some of those cultural tourists here to Oklahoma? Because we've got the material. And people that love this stuff, and they will travel to see it. The second thing is that also on that second floor of our building downtown, we've established a new study center. And we have got not only fantastic objects, we have tremendous archival material from the Gene Adkins collection himself. He created over decades wonderful relationships with many of the artists that he had. It's a treasure trove for scholars from that standpoint.
So you're talking letters and
absolutely
correspondence.
Yes.
You know.
And then we've got, you know, in our Chapman Library at the main campus, you know, we've pulled out some very special collections there. The Campbell Library, for example, the Lawson Library, 1,100 volumes of rare and out of print books dealing with Native American art and culture. The Nettie Wheeler Collection. I mean, we've got oral collections of oral histories, great photographic archives, and so forth. The challenge now will be, how do we activate this study center? How do we take these collections, take this archival material, and marry it with a robust research agenda so that we can put Philbrook again at the forefront of the dialogue regarding Native American art and culture? And how do we do that so that it not only allows us to develop scholarship, but also allows us to develop some stature for Philbrook moving forward?
My guest today is Rand Sulfolk, the executive director of Philbrook Museum of Art. Philbrook downtown opens to the public on Friday. 30,000 square feet of gallery space in the Brady Arts District on Brady between Boston and Cincinnati. And it completes the campus of that block, or two blocks, with the Arts and Humanities Council, their Hardesty, the Woody Guthrie Archives, 108 Contemporary, and now Philbrook and the Zero Center from the University of Tulsa. This just little arts neighborhood. And
Don't forget Living Arts.
And Living Arts, yeah.
It's a fantastic mix.
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
Yep. As well as there's some little galleries in storefrents.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's the Glassblowing Studios down there.
Yes.
You've got
mm-hmm.
the Tulsa Artist Cooperative right there. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great arts and culture just packed in that one little area.
And I tell you, you're already starting to see the results. I mean, there are people in this neighborhood nearly every night of the week walking. It is a vibrancy that if you haven't been downtown in a while, you won't recognize it.
It's an astonishing renaissance. Friday night, this past Friday night,
I was
trying
packed.
To get down
you,
there.
You couldn't
had
get
the Tulsa Tough. There was the Drillers game going on.
Yeah.
Guthrie Green had something going. I mean, it was unbelievable. It's really fantastic.
Yeah. Well, in our remaining time, I want to talk about another great thing about Philbrook that most people aren't aware of. Philbrook was featured prominently in a new book called Magnetic, The Art and Science of Engagement. And it looked at about 9 museums around the country that are doing a great job of connecting with their community and connecting with their audience. And whatever their area of expertise is, it could be an outdoor museum or an art museum such as Philbrook or a science museum. They're doing an excellent job of connecting with their public. And Philbrook is one of the 9 institutions. And I think if you would have said a decade ago, Philbrook would be one of the 9 institutions that is incredible at connecting with their community, I think people would say, what?
Well,
but in fact, this does point out the change that has happened in Philbrook over the last decade.
This is a great study. It started off actually as an independent research study that was done in conjunction with our national accrediting body, the American Alliance of Museums. And these two independent researchers started doing work. They focused on originally 200 museums. It was a blind study, and they started looking at both financial and other survey data that had been contributed as part of these accreditation processes during that time period. They honed in on what they called 18 key indicators. And from that, they started looking at that material. They took that 200 museums, threw it in the hopper with another 6,000 nonprofit organizations. They got data from the National Center for Comparable Statistics, which, honest to God, actually exists. And then from that, they were able to whittle it down to 26 institutions that they wanted to focus on. And at that point, they went back to the American Alliance of Museums and said, okay, these are the ones we're particularly interested in. Would you mind reaching out to them? AAM did that, said, okay, you've been part of a blind study. Would you now, is it okay if we share who you are with them? Philbrook was one of those 26. From the 26, they ultimately did additional research, and they decided they were going to focus on 10 case studies. And again, Philbrook was fortunate enough to be within those 10. At that point, they switched it. And instead of just looking at quantitative data, they began to look at the qualitative side of how these museums engage with their communities. And from that list, they ultimately decided to focus on 6 institutions, not 9. And they took the research back to AAM. AAM said, this is fantastic. Let's fast track a book. And that's what they did. And Philbrook was fortunate to be selected as one of the 6 museums in America that were profiled.
And I think what's interesting is what they saw was how quickly the institution has flipped as far as its engagement with the community. As you know, for most people who've been longtime Tulsans, I think the book points this out. You know, if you ask, what do you know about Philbrook? Oh, it's a real pretty house, maybe gardens. I went there when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That was the common response. And now that is really changing. I mean, you have programming on your Saturdays. Second Saturdays, I guess, are free.
Yeah.
And you have families, hundreds of families coming out once a month for that.
It's pretty exciting. I think what's, you know, the story that we tell about this is that when I first came here 6 years ago, between my first interview and my first board meeting, I conducted what I call my completely unscientific survey. And many people probably listening have heard me talk about this. But I went out and I just asked just about anybody that would listen one question. And the question back then was, is Philbrook better known for what it is or what it does? And almost without hesitation, probably 98% of the roughly 60 people I spoke to said what it is. What I heard, and pretty much in this order, was the gardens are beautiful, the villa is wonderful, and you should go visit Gilcrease. Gilcrease is great. That's fine. But no one said anything to me about it's incredible, the exhibitions that you bring to this community. What you're doing with families is unbelievable. Those kids' programs, they're a home run. We never heard that. And so ultimately, what that told us very quickly was that while we were exceptional in many ways, we'd yet to figure out how to become essential within our community. And that really began to frame a set of marching orders for us as an organization. And as a consequence of that, we've spent the better part of the last 6 years trying to develop and embrace a culture of growth, inclusivity, and collaboration. And I think that's what's caused us, along with a lot of hard work and dedication, to transition to this new version of Philbrook.
When you talk to nonprofit experts around the country, they say being essential is one of the most important things you can do as a nonprofit. That means your mission is important, crucial to the community. And so how do you think that Philbrook is doing today? Do you feel you are essential to the community?
I think we're always going to be a continuous project. Mm-hmm. There's always more work for us to do, more really important work for us to do. But I think that if you look at the way in which the community has responded to our programs, that is incredibly affirming to us because it shows us that we're at least heading in the right direction. I mean, you mentioned Second Saturdays. When we started that program 5 years ago, pre-program, we averaged about 490 people every second Saturday of the month. Now we're averaging nearly 2,000 people every second Saturday of the month. You mentioned Third Thursdays earlier. You know, that was a new program for us. We're now averaging between 100 and 150 people every third Thursday. You know, people that have an interest, whether you're 18 or you're 80, you're welcome. Yeah, you know, but if you have an interest in topics related to modern contemporary art and culture, we want you there, and people are responding to that. So that part of it's been really exciting for us to see.
And I remember the predecessor to Third Thursdays, which was, it was a cocktail hour in many sense. It was a social, which is fine, and yeah. Museums do that. But now there's that sociality is still there, but you're usually working hand in hand. You're learning something from an artist directly, or he's showing you slides of his work, or he's talking about his life story, or you're learning something in depth about the exhibition going on.
We we took a good hard look at that. And the problem with, you know, many, as you said, many peer institutions stay open late, spin some music, provide some food and drink, and, you know, try and focus on a young professional audience. And that's great. But we tried it before in a couple different iterations at Philbrook, as I understand it. And the problem was there really wasn't that resonance. I mean, that's all well and good until the next bar opens or the new club opens, and you can go listen to music and have a cocktail there. And so what we decided was that first, we would always have a social component. But number two, instead of focusing on just a younger professional audience, we called it a younger psychographic. And then the third thing was that we were always going to bring it back to our reason for being as a visual arts organization.
Instead of being ambience.
Right. There was always going to be something programmatic. Which is the same as a bar. Yes. Yeah. That would engage people with being at Philbrook. And that was important to us.
Yeah. Well, the book sort of outlines a lot of the changes at the museum where your staff is always coming up with new ideas, from a cat cam that roams around the garden to just, you know, to innovative ideas and pursuing things that in the past Philbrook might not have pursued. I'm thinking of some of the recent exhibitions and some of the upcoming exhibitions where, you know, the Max Weber exhibition, for example. You know, Philbrook doesn't even own a Max Weber, but you managed to put together an incredible show about this artist.
Well, we've got the first thing I think is really important and the book talks about is that a fundamental part of our equation is we've got an amazing board of trustees. There is incredible leadership there. And I'm not just talking about being financially generous and philanthropic. I mean, these are people that make big investments of their time and energy and expertise in making us a better organization. But we also have an astonishing staff. These people, I really believe most of them would walk through fire on behalf of the organization. They are committed at their core to our mission. They want to make the world a better place. They want to make Philbrook an active participant in the lives of people in this community. And I think what we've done as an organization is hopefully create a framework within which people can bring their strengths to bear on those goals and objectives. And you give them the resources and the freedom to do that, and amazing things can happen.
Amazing things are going to be happening this weekend when Philbrook Downtown opens to the public and featured in the new book, Magnetic, The Art and Sciences of Engagement. Rand Suffolk, thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Rand Suffolk is the executive director of Philbrook Museum of Art. Philbrook will open its satellite location, Philbrook Downtown, to the public on Friday, featuring 30,000 square feet of gallery space in the heart of the Brady Arts District, located on Brady between Boston and Cincinnati. Also, the museum was recently featured in the new book, Magnetic, The Art and Science of Engagement. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just click on the program tab and you can find Studio Tulsa there and look through our archives. And while you're there, check out the website. Lots of good information there as well. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.